So I've been trying to figure out what DJFA stands for.
All right.
And I have gone through, it's a federal program, but I have no, I mean, I've gone through probably 10 different documents that does not say what the acronym stands for. Other than, there is one that kind of closed in on it a little bit this morning, but I don't think that that's it.
The DJFA. It's an address in our policy manual that if you go there under that address, then that gives you what that policy is. So it's just a locator for the policy.
So it doesn't really stand for anything. No acronym.
No.
You see how easily I can be just, you know, duped here. Thanks.
Well, it still doesn't make any sense.
But it's a federal program that allows for this, is what I'm reading here. There's a federal document as to that. But it does not say that there's an acronym for it.
Yeah. Wow.
District Financial...
There we go. District, man. Now it's getting dangerous.
No, here it says David J. Flood Architect, but that's... I don't think that's it.
Yeah, no.
I don't think that's it. All right. Well, okay. You carry on with
Thank you for that help.
No, I was no help at all, but you're welcome anyway.
All right. Well, let's get back to business here of what's happening tonight. You got some old business here. Second reading tonight of an update to the transgender guideline policy. And I guess we'll start with you, Kurt. Just kind of the goal of this is just to update some outdated policies. Is that right?
Well, yes. It actually, we don't have a policy in place yet to protect transgender students. It's making a clear statement to students and staff and parents and the community that we support all students. And it gives us guidelines on how to, you know, deal with certain issues and how they would be handled. And so we're consistent on that. We welcome all, you know, all public comments, even though the board meeting starts at 6:30, I mean, we probably won't get to that till closer to 7:30. I encourage anybody who wants to come out and speak pro or con, that's fine. We're not all experts up out on that board, so sometimes it's always good to hear from the community on suggestions and ideas. I think it's an important piece. You know, we're not reinventing the wheel, and we're not the first ones doing this. I call it the Big 12. Going back to the old college days here, but like the Kansas City, there's four districts in Kansas City, Lawrence, Topeka. Topeka's had this same policy in place for 10 years, and they've never had any challenges to it. I think there's a kind of a miss. I think people are looking at the too broad of a picture that, you know, because transgender students are a lot different than students that want to cross dress or do certain things or want a sex change operation. I mean, it's transgender, and not only that, it's not that a student can't come in and just say, you know, I want to be a female today, and then it takes a parental approval, and you know, so there's a process to go through, and once they identify, then they must remain that, you know, for the rest of their high school.
Okay,
I'd probably just add a little bit more to it would be that, just like earlier when I mentioned the Title VI, the Indian Education Formula Grant, that Title VI is federal. This conversation we're having now ties to Title IX, that there's federal laws, federal guidelines, that if you receive federal funds, you have to follow those guidelines, just like with the Indian Education Formula Grant hearing that we have to have in order to get the $14,000. Same kind of thing here with Title IX, that there's Title IX protections that say that entities getting funding can't discriminate against individuals based on age, disability, sex, gender, and there's an aspect of it where there's gender identity, that an individual identifies with a gender different than what's indicated on their birth certificate, and that there's protections for those individuals. And we have generic Title IX guidelines saying we will not discriminate as an employer, we will not discriminate against individuals, students, parents, others, based on age, disability, sex, religion, those things. And this policy helps clarify the obligation, the responsibilities of us to protect those students that have gender identity that's different than what is indicated on their birth certificate. And without getting into a lot of details, it's been an issue at the federal level that there was a Dear Colleague letter from the Obama administration in 2016 that spelled out some protections from the federal level. The Trump administration came in and changed that. And there's a lot of case law, there's a lot of things going on sorting out what are those rights of those individuals and are they protected at the federal level. Well, at the federal level, they're saying, you know, we're not enforcing this in terms of gender identity in bathrooms and locker rooms, those areas. That's up to the states. Well, some states have said they recognize gender identity and the right to use a bathroom that matches gender identity. Right. Other states have not acted on it. Kansas is a state that has not taken action. So then the Kansas State Board of Education says that's a local school district issue. Federal's not dealing with it. State's not dealing with it. It's a local school district issue. And the same thing with the Kansas Athletic Activities Association. They're saying it's a local issue. So that's how it comes under the jurisdiction of our school board, would be because it is a local issue. Our board wants to clarify what are the guidelines we have for protecting these students. Right. That's a long answer, right, but there's sure. a lot to it.
And that's a good point. And, you know, we also look at, you know, KSB, I mean, they're our partner as far as, I mean, they have a team of attorneys that we can, you know, utilize, and they review this policy, and they're recommending statewide that all school districts adopt this policy or a similar policy. And even the National School Board Association also has done the same thing. And I've even, even the NEA, the Teachers Education National Education Association, also support a transgender type policy. So, you know, there may be some tweaks that we need to do on it, but I think the policy is pretty solid, and it's on a case by case for some things. And, you know, but I mean, come on, I'm going to say this on the radio, but, you know, I'm sure in my lifetime I've been in a bathroom with 1,000 transgenders, and they just want to go to the bathroom. They're probably a lot more scared to go in there than I am. We're not even aware of it, but I just think it's, you know, a student is a student, and we need to protect all of them in any way we can. And with the high suicide rate for teenagers these days, and that's a factor for a lot of transgender students. They're not accepted.
I'd like to add, too, that it's been stated a couple different times about the Topeka policy, and they do have guidelines, regulations from Topeka that we took and essentially used, but we did administratively. We went through those guidelines. We made some changes to make the guidelines that have been presented to the board consistent with what our practice has been. We've had a practice in place that we've been following. It just hasn't been put in writing. Well, these guidelines put in writing for board approval the practice that we've had. So there's some changes in it from what's in Topeka, but we're administratively comfortable that we can continue to treat all the kids with respect and dignity and honor the kind of like I've said before, but honor the rights of all the kids. And as Kurt's saying, try to educate them, meet their needs without infringing on the rights of others. And it is a balancing act of we want to respect the rights of all students, but we don't want to give certain students additional rights beyond others. So that's what we strive to do with these guidelines. And that's one reason case by case is such an important part of it, is what are the accommodations we need to make in order to meet the needs of this student without infringing upon others.
And yeah, I mean, this doesn't mean this is, you know, I think the education of the public maybe needs a little, I mean, but, you know, I think where we run into the things that I've been hearing is, you know, because people think this does not mean that a male student is going to be able to walk up to the girls' bathroom at any time and go, I'm a girl today and I'm going in there because it's my right. It's like, that's not what this means at all.
That becomes a disciplinary matter. That's, it would right now with any boy that would walk, let's say any boy that walks in a girls' bathroom or, does inappropriate things. That's a disciplinary issue. It's not a discrimination. It's not a rights issue.
And that's kind of why you have the declaration ahead of time here by the parent or guardian,
right,
of what, you know, gender they identify with.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, there's kind of a semi-legal process that they have to follow, and it's not just a whim.
And there is a section dealing with confidentiality and the use of pronouns and other aspects of it that do, they comply with the law, and they also are respectful of individuals and the differences that are there, that we're no longer in just a male-female gender world.
And like Dr. Wade said, that I also spoke to Fran Martin, who's one of the executive directors for Acacia, and she echoed what you'd said, they're relying on the local school district, so however they identify the student is how the Acacia will identify the student.
And we're more than willing to sit down with individuals, with groups, to walk through this and what does it mean for situations that they have questions about. So we want people to know that we do want to have open communication about it, and a lot of thought has been done behind the scenes with these guidelines.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk real quick here about some of the other items here. Yeah, donations and grants are always a pleasure to talk about. Here.
Yes, they are. I'll grab that real quick. We also have our Jones list that we have to go over. Mm-hmm. Dr. Wade, you have the Jones list? Yeah, why don't you go ahead and...
I do have that. That the Jones list is from Michelle Jones from Communications, in case people are wondering about that. But it's MHS graduation is Sunday, May 19th at 2 o'clock p.m. at Bramlage Coliseum. The last day of school is May 23rd. It's a half day of school, so there won't be any lunch served that day. Three and a half weeks left of school, so they're just jam-packed with field trips, concerts, end-of-year activities, athletics, all kinds of things. This is kind of scary, but for those who are planning ahead, we've already got plans for online registration opens Monday, July 15th, central enrollments Friday, July 26th, and the first day of school next year, Wednesday, August 14th. And then right before I came over here to the studio, I got a message from Michelle that we've been doing a survey about getting ideas from people about the name of the new school, the new elementary in Blue Township. And she said she's closed the survey this morning, but we had 832 responses. So I want to thank everybody for giving us ideas, and now we'll have a committee together and work on what's the actual name going to be for the new elementary in Blue Township.
Cool. I haven't seen any of those names yet, but I'd love to see it. I'm sure we'll probably filter them out, and the most common ones maybe go with that filter those down. But I'd like to talk about our donations and grants, because it's a really important piece of our district, and there's a lot of things that, unfortunately, we can't fund for kids, and so our PTOs and local businesses really come a long ways. But we have an $800 cash donation from Eisenhower Middle School Booster Club for the Eagles of Excellence Worlds of Fun trip, and that's an annual trip they make every year, and it's an incentive for students. They have to have a certain grade point average, and so many they can't have more than so many absences or tardies, and if they qualify, then they get to go on the trip, and it's been really popular, and I think almost every year since they've implemented that, like over 90% of the students get to go this trip. So all of a sudden they need a whole bunch of – I'm sure they probably need some chaperones for that. But we also have a $500 cash donation to Eisenhower Middle School for EMS Reads, and that's from also the Eisenhower Middle School Booster Club. And a $12,000 cash grant from Riley County, Raising Riley to College Hill Preschool for reduced fees for families, and that's a really common, we get that grant a lot, and that's a critical piece, because a lot of those students at College Hill Preschool need those reduced fees.
Fantastic. Well, it's always good to hear about that. Yeah. Out of time here, we're going to get our next guest from Manhattan High School in here, Greg Hoyt, who's retiring.
Oh, good.
Retiring.
Okay.
So, we've got to kick you out. Sorry, guys.
Thank you, Brandon.
Great. Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks so much. We'll be back with more In Focus after this on News Radio KMAN.